Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. I am Chris Graham. Scott German's joining me. We're going to talk some UVA sports, football, and basketball, which gets started this week. I think we'll start with football, Scott. And we're 48 hours past the big win over Georgia Tech. Virginia winning 40-36, coming back from a two-touchdown deficit in the second half. And it's got a couple of days to sink in now, Scott. So your thoughts about this football team? Six wins and a big win over Georgia Tech.
Well, I watched the football game again, bits and pieces of it on tape, and even more impressed watching it on replay. That team had so many chances, so many opportunities in that game that they could have just kind of, I hate to use the analogy, the old Virginia, but there were so many spots in that game that my mind kind of thought, oh no, here we go again. You know, they're going to just fold the tent up and lose. But, you know, they did not. They just played with tremendous resiliency and confidence. Kind of makes you wonder how in the world they lost as badly as they did to Boston College and Pittsburgh. But, they're young kids, so every day, every Saturday, you don't know what you get. But, I'm very, very impressed. And the new word that I want to use, I haven't used, but I talked about resiliency and determination. But the word that comes to mind watching Coach Mendenhall, the press conference, and is the passion that he has and the passion that you can see in this football team. And, you know, just looking back, last year, maybe to some degree, certainly the end of the London era, that was not a word you would associate with UVA football, passion. And now it is. And it showed Saturday in the murk and the rain and the messy field conditions. I mean, this team played with a lot of passion, and that's just something that's just heartwarming to me to see Virginia football have again.
Yeah, you know, what surprised me the most is the folks in the stadium. I mean, literally people were still just getting back in their seats from halftime. After Georgia Tech scores a touchdown, 78-yard run, Taquan Marshall first play from scrimmage, and then interception on Virginia's first play from scrimmage. I mean, we're 35 seconds into the second half. Again, there are some people who haven't even returned back to the stadium yet. It's pouring down rain, and it's 28-13, just like that. And, there are already people saying, hey, I'm leaving, it's cold, it's rainy, I mean, fans at it. And you look down at the UVA sidelines now, so everybody's given up. In the stands. And I don't blame them. It was a cold day. It was a rainy day. I mean, it was just a horrible, horrible day for fans, everything else. And those players down there could have easily packed it in for lots of reasons. I mean, it's just like for us, you know, it's cold and rainy. It's also, they're on the field. I mean, they're getting, you know, they're muddy and everything else. And instead of reacting in the way that you expect a team to react after two horrible bang-bang plays like that, those guys were still jumping up and down, just like you see. You know, if you've watched this team on TV, if you've been in Scott Stadium and seen them in person, you know, they're always bouncing on the sidelines after big plays. You see that. Even after the pick six, they're still bouncing up and down on the sidelines like, hey, okay, we're down 28-13. We're going to still win this game. And there's no Virginia team in the last 10 years that responds to that kind of adversity or anything close to that kind of adversity with that same approach. And you know, within 5 minutes, the game was tied. And so, this is a different mindset. And really, you know, it's almost like when we look back in a few years, and we will look back in a few years, at what turned things around for this program. It won't even be the Boise State game, which was a big win on national TV on the blue field out there in Boise. I mean, that was a very impressive. It will be this game because everything was stacked against you. You had lost two straight, demoralizing two straight losses at that. You're down 28-13 on a yucky day, and you come back and win. That's where programs are defined, not when everything's going great and you win a game. It's when you're at your backs are against the wall and everything's going against you, and you come back and you figure out a way to win. That's the game. That's the game when this program's going to say, you know, in a few years, we're going to say that's the one. That's where this program grew up. I think that's where we're going to point to.
Well, agree 100%. And throw in this, too. They're doing that. They're having to generate 100% of their own energy because they're doing that in a stadium that's two-thirds empty, and probably a half of the third that's left is sitting there covered up in tarps and rain gear, not making a whole lot of noise. So they weren't feeding off of it. You can't go back and say, man, that crowd really, they played off the emotions of that crowd, because they did not, because that there was no emotion, very little in that stadium. Although we give credit for the fans that were there, they were pretty hardy, but for the most part, if not entirely, that football team turned that game around strictly from the energy that they created on that football field and on that sideline. Because you're right, they're down 15 points before you could even get settled in your seat, or if you were home in your recliner or whatever, they're down 15 points. And they could have thrown in the towel. I mean, at that point, that game could have gone. Georgia Tech could have put 50 on the board, and no one would have been shocked. So, yeah, I believe you're dead on. That when this football program officially gets stamped as having turned themselves around, we're gonna look back and say it happened, and it happened on that Saturday afternoon in the rain in the second half against Georgia Tech.
So we'll switch gears a bit. I haven't done my research on Louisville yet, still getting through the post game of Georgia Tech, and we'll look at Louisville later this week. But that said, today Coach Mendenhall, his weekly press conference and he also said that they're starting their prep, obviously, for Louisville. And he was asked the question, hey, did you look at last year's tape? Obviously, Virginia, a two-win team last season, actually had Louisville in the last 2 minutes. Virginia was leading that game with 2 minutes ago, and Louisville had to come back and win that game, a season when Louisville won 9 and had a Heisman Trophy winner on their sidelines, as it turns out. And Coach Mendenhall said he only watched the last play, and I think that's a signal that he's reminding his team, hey, that's great, we played really well against him last year, but we lost that game. It was also pointed out by one of the writers today at the press conference that this Virginia program, the last two times it beat Georgia Tech in a midseason ACC game, the Cavs lost their next game. And so, as much as you want to bask in the glow of this great win, and it was a great win, a program-defining win, I don't think anybody on that sideline, anybody in that locker room wants to go 6-6 now. They're 6-3 now, and it's the Louisville team that's 5-4. With some bad losses, and they're a team that gives up a lot of points, a lot of yards on offense. I mean, this is a winnable game. It's on the road in Louisville, but it's a winnable game for the Cavs. And you want to kind of reverse that history of recent wins over Georgia Tech and following that up with a loss. You want to go out there and play well next week because, hey, the pressure's off. You don't have to get 6 anymore to go to a bowl. You got your 6. Now let's go out and win 7-8, and I think that's the message. You could kind of sense that Coach Mendenhall's given his team, we're not done yet. And we haven't really thought X's and O's yet about this team, Scott. But going into this game, obviously the pressure's off, and Virginia has a chance to go out there and sneak another one out against Louisville.
Yeah, so the expression that I've heard read tossed around is from this point on, they're playing with house money. And that is true. There's definitely, they got their 6 wins. Which makes them bowl eligible, and considering where this football program has been the last decade, that's important. That's extremely important to be a part of that group of teams that are playing past November, that are playing into December, playing into postseason, if you will, in a bowl game. That's extremely important. But they've got 3 opportunities to add to it, and first comes Louisville. But I'm not buying into the fact that Louisville's downtrodden. They're pretty much giving up on the season. They're no longer playing for any major bowl games. They're barely a 500 team. Still got a Heisman Trophy quarterback, and that could give UVA fit. And he's still out there trying to perform at his highest level. So it's going to be a tough game. Don't know what the environment's going to be like down there. considering they're having a somewhat of a down season compared to what they've had the last couple of years. So it's a great opportunity if you're a Virginia football, if you're the player. This is a tremendous opportunity to just keep moving that bar up a little bit.
So we'll break down X's and O's more later this week as far as that goes, but also later this week. Now we'll switch gears a bit. So the football team is 6-3, still three to go. We're going to a bowl. We just don't know where. Win some more games, and you'll go to a better bowl, obviously. Basketball starts Friday night. The tip-off, 7 o'clock in JPJ, UNC Greensboro. We start the season off again with the Spartans last year on the road in Greensboro, this year in Charlottesville. And so I'll be courtside. Scott will be doing something more important, something about Bob Dylan or something like that. I can't imagine why a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see Bob Dylan would interfere with basketball, but I totally can't understand that. But
hey, Chris, it's UNCG, not UNC Cheat. So that's why.
Well, and we could forget, even if it was UNC Chapel Hill, hey, Bob Dylan, that's once in a lifetime.
I might still pick Bob Dylan.
Yeah, and nobody would blame you for that. But you'll watch the game on tape afterwards. I'll share my thoughts after you share yours. I want to get your impression. What are you looking for Friday night, this opener? It's there's lots of players back, but also, you know, Leonard Parentes is gone. It seems like, you know, this is going to be a new feel UVA basketball team. So what are you going to be looking for when you watch the tape of this game, game one of the sort of a new era for UVA basketball?
A lot of excitement. I'm going to be just very, very anxious to see a number of different things Friday night. One, I'm going to call him Cal Guy 2.0. From everything I've read, everything I've heard, he has reshaped himself during the offseason, and you're going to be amazed at what he has turned himself into. Tyrone Lewis, I think, is now have got a defined role. I think Isaiah Wilkins, healthy, is going to be a beast. You're looking at potentially the best ever backcourt, the best guard tandem in the history of UVA with Lewis and Guy. And we're forgetting about Hall, who probably will be a starter. But at some point in time, you know, Guy and Tyrone are going to be on the court at the same time. So, I mean, there is so much to look forward to. And for the first couple of weeks, obviously, they're going to be flying somewhat under the radar because the one that preseason poll that I've read, Virginia's not even in the top 25. So I like that personally because I think that gives them a lot of incentive. So it's a fun time to be a UVA sports fan right now.
Yeah, you know, I'll say, I mean, with the fact that Coach Bennett plays basically a three-man backcourt, Devin Hall will start in the backcourt, but it will be Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy who get the bulk of the attention. All three of those guys will handle the ball, but Jerome will be the point. I mean, what you consider the point guard. I'm looking for Guy, too. Guy talked – I talked with Guy at Media Day a couple weeks ago about, what he's doing to maybe improve his game, getting into the lane and – getting to the foul line more. He only shot 35 free throws last year in 32 games, so, only getting to the line once a game. He'll have to improve upon that. Also, it'll make defenses more honest. He shot 49.3% from three-point range, but if he's, if he could scare defenses with his ability to put the ball on the floor, it'll just open up things on the perimeter for him even more. DeAndre Hunter in the backcourt, we haven't seen him. He redshirted last year, but all the talk is that he's one of the best NBA prospects on the team. Also looking at Jay Huff, all the talk about Jay Huff, who's now 7-1 with three-point range, the ability to put the ball on the floor and get to the basket off the dribble. Maybe not as much a post guy, but, in this day and age, not a lot of people are good post guys. I think this team eventually, I'm not sure if we'll see it Friday night, but I think we'll start to see the workings of it Friday night. I think this team will be as efficient offensively as the group a couple years ago when you had Malcolm Brogdon and Anthony Gill. I think this team eventually, by mid-January, will be as good offensively as that team. Now, ESPN, the ESPN insider who writes about ACC basketball, wrote about, and one of the college basketball guys, ranked the top 50 defenses in NCAA basketball, and UVA was number one. And that's not surprising in one sense, because UVA has that reputation of being the best defense. But with the changes, you know, you could have seen maybe somebody else sneak up there for the, you know, this season, you know, with all the personnel changes that Virginia has. And Virginia, unequivocally, in the eyes of the people who watch and pay attention and have to write about this, still expected to be that top defensive team. But I think when you see the improvements offensively, last year in the KenPom offensive efficiency rankings, we were somewhere in the right around 50 out of the top of the 351 Division I teams. The teams of a couple years ago, the team that went the Elite Eight, was ranked in the top 10 in terms of offensive efficiency. I know UVA basketball doesn't score a lot of points, you know, and so you think, hey, if you don't score a lot of points, that means you're not very good offensively. But the pace Virginia plays, when you adjust for pace, points per possession, Virginia had been that group with Brogdon and Gill and Justin Anderson and Mike Toby. You know, that group had been one of the best offenses in the country. I think this group has the potential to be better than that group. Just give them some time. And, you know, so, yeah, I'm looking to see. I think we'll see some glimpses of that Friday night. I think we'll see this. I'm looking to see Huff. I'm looking to see Guy. Looking to see Hunter. Those are the three guys I'll be watching. And then, you know, how Jerome and how he adjusts to being the guy now, the starting point guard, how Hall and Wilkins provide the senior leadership, and what role Jack Salt plays. I mean, there's so many things out there. And I feel like it's Christmas time. We're getting ready to, you know, open some presents up on Friday night to see this team play for the first time.
Well, so if Friday night's Christmas, it would be Christmas Eve, maybe, and then Saturday could be Christmas Day if you're a UVA fan and we come up with a win against Louisville. But, you know, two things. One, you and I being kind of geeks and looking at the numbers, and the one thing that we both know is that even though UVA doesn't score a lot of points on offense, the analytics say they're a darn good efficient. They're a darn good offensive efficiency team. They make the most out of their possession, and that's more, a lot more important analytically looking at the game than how many points you score. So, you know, I think game 60 since Tony Bennett has been at the helm. I think games in the 60s are a thing of beauty, because usually when our games are in the 60s, the opponent's sometimes struggling to break 40. Yeah. And that's a good thing. That's fine with me. I'm perfectly okay with that. The other thing, too, is Tony, you know, we got a bunch of players that are worthy of getting minutes. And sometimes that's a problem, but that's the one thing that I think Tony does a phenomenal job of. And you can tell me what your opinion is that he seems to keep the players happy, even though he's juggling. I mean, last year, for the largest part of the season, he was playing 10 or 11 players. But he seems to be able to figure out a way to do that, and it looks like he does it pretty well. What do you think about that?
Yeah, and he's got that same issue this year. And, you know, so much of the fact that Virginia is not ranked in the top 25, either the coaches or AP polls, when the early, you know, post last season renderings of, you know, early top 25s, you know, those ones that come out in early April, mid-April, had Virginia as high as top five in the country. You know, when Mariel Shayok and Darius Thompson particularly decided to transfer out, you know, a lot of people said, well, you're losing two seniors, you know, that's not good. You know, you had two other guys, Hall and Wilkins, you would have had four seniors, you know, playing significant roles for you. Now you lost two of those guys. What's going on there in Charlottesville? And I've been saying this since even before last season ended. I didn't know Shayok and Thompson were leaving, but their minutes were not going to be the same, because you had Jay Huff, and everything you heard about Jay Huff last year from the team in terms of what he did in practice and also what DeAndre Hunter did in practice was those guys were going to get some big minutes this year. Now, I don't know if either – I don't think either is going to start necessarily Friday night. Huff might get a start. He might be starting in the front court alongside Wilkins, but I think probably Jack Salt will start the first few games, and they'll let Huff kind of work in as the first guy off the bench from the post. But, man, you know, the replacement of talent, and we haven't even talked about Nigel Johnson yet. I call him the microwave. He reminds me of Vinnie Johnson, the former Detroit Pistons great from back in the late 80s, early 90s. you know, Nido Johnson at Rutgers last year, he averaged 11 points a game, but he scored 20 or more six times. He's a guy who can put points on the board too. And, you know, so this is a team that's going to be much, much better offensively. Defensively, I think it's going to actually be better too, because here's the difference with this team that we've not seen UVA teams have in the past. The pack line defense, you know, doesn't need a shot blocker at the back end. But we've got a shot blocker at the back end, Jay Huff at 7'1", an athletic 7'1". He's going to block shots that we've not been able to block. And so what the pack line defense does is it puts so much ball pressure on ball handlers that, you know, the one vulnerability in that defense is if a ball handler gets past his guy, you know, you kind of remember, if you're a UVA basketball fan, you watch enough UVA basketball, sometimes you see too many layups in the lane. You're like, hey, this defense is so tough, why do we see occasionally a little spurt of layups? You're not going to see that with Jay Huff out there, because he's going to be the eraser back there. So this team's going to be better offensively. It's going to be better defensively. It might not be in November when we see this. You know, we've got a game at VCU in week two, you know, next week, next Friday. We've got a game at West Virginia coming up in December. We've got Wisconsin coming to Charlottesville. There may be a loss or two among those games. But I'd say by January, when this team's in ACC play, get out of their way. Because I really think, and this isn't just talking, this is, you know, I'm looking at this and saying, you add all these pieces together, this is a Final Four team, this Virginia team, and it's only going to get better because it's a young team as well.
It's a, you know, we know because we follow the team. It's a long basketball season. If you want to kind of get a handle of just how long it is, put it in perspective, the World Series just ended last week. When the national championship game is played, will be right around the opening night of Major League Baseball next year. Mm-hmm. Usually the Final Four of the national championship is played on the Monday of opening day, but I think some teams are playing on Tuesday and Wednesday. So, you know, Major League Baseball will have gone through their off season, gone through their spring training, and starting a new season when we crown a national champion. So that's the beauty of basketball. If you lose a couple early games, it's not like football, that you can lose a game in September on Labor Day that pretty much mathematically eliminates you from the playoff picture. The other thing about, we're talking about Tony managing minutes, the conspiracy theory in me is that I'm not so sure how much of Shayok and Thompson and Reuter, that transfer, those transfers out. I've got a thought that most of those came after that end of the season meeting when Tony may have sat down with him and said, look, guys, you know, you're welcome to come back, but I'm just telling you up front, your minutes may not be what you think they were going to be. What do you think about that possibility?
I don't doubt that at all, because, you know, even accounting for Johnson being a transfer in, and he wouldn't have transferred in if Shayok and Thompson particularly hadn't transferred out, you still got nine guys that are going to be rotation guys this year. If you're Shayok and Thompson, that's 11 guys in your rotation. And, yeah, the minutes are diminished. And I don't think, you know, Shayok is so talented. He went to Iowa State. He's going to sit a year. He's going to play there next year. He may put up 15 points a game at Iowa State. I don't think there's any doubt he will. He's a talented player. The problem with him from a perspective of being able to rely upon him from a night-on, night-off basis is he would put up 17 for you one night, and the next night he'd shoot two shots, play 5 minutes, and that would be it. You know, he was either the guy who would lead your offense or a guy that was an afterthought, and that wasn't Tony's playing time. That was pretty much basically what he would decide. You know, Tony would put him in for a rotation in the first half, and if Shayok had no energy, Tony knew that, hey, I'm not going to get him to have energy. I'm just going to leave him off the floor. We got other guys who can play, and you can't rely on a senior who you can't put out there reliably for 25, 30 minutes a night. He's not that kind of player. And so, you know, yeah, that might, you know, the stats will look great. We're going to look in a couple years when he's there at Iowa State next season. He's going to put up some big nights. He might have 30, 35 points, especially because of the offense Iowa State plays. You know, they're an up-and-down-the-floor kind of team. They score 85 points a game. So he'll have good numbers. And we may lament and say, oh, wow, we're missing Shayok. But No, we're not going to miss Shayok because he didn't consistently do that for us, and we couldn't rely upon that. Thompson, I have no ill will towards either of these guys, Thompson either especially. Thompson's not a guy who's going to light the stat book up. He's sort of like another Devin Hall. You know, Hall being a guy that is not going to, you know, score 20 points a game and get 10 rebounds a game, but he does everything right and doesn't do anything wrong. Thompson's another guy like that. But how many guys can you have on the floor who are glue guys? You know, we've already got Wilkins, too, who kind of plays that role. At some point, you need guys like Kyle Guy, you need a DeAndre Hunter, you need a Jay Huff, who can actually put the ball in the basket, you know, do some things like that. You can't have all role players. You have to have a mix of role players and guys who can, you know, kind of carry the load. And Thompson was another role player. So, you know, if you get rid of one guy who's sort of mercurial, you know, a guy like Shayok, who from one night to the next, you don't know what you're going to get. You lose a guy like Thompson who, no offense to him, but he's going to put 5 points and five rebounds on the scoreboard, and that's what he's going to do. You know, yeah, those guys are replaceable. They have already been replaced. And the replacements, in my opinion, Johnson replacing Shayok, I'll take Johnson. And, you know, the Hunter sort of replacing the role of Thompson, I'll take the guy that the NBA scouts like. So, yeah, this is a better team. And Tony still has an issue because he's got so many players. He's going to have 10 or 11 guys even without those guys that he's got to figure out to get minutes for. I think it's a good problem Tony has.
And I think the consensus is that Reuter was just not an ACC caliber player, bottom line.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And he's a guy who I think he went to George Mason. He will go there. He's going to sit a year out because he's only he'll be a junior in school this year. In the A-10, his next 2 years, he'll put up big numbers because he's a 6'7", back-to-the-basket post scorer. You know, to put in perspective, DeAndre Hunter is a 6'7 guy who actually weighs more than Reuter, and he's a guard who will shoot threes and drive to the basket with his dribble. You know, 6'7", back-to-the-basket scorers do not work in the ACC. They'll work in the A-10 just fine. He'll probably be a guy who scores, you know, 10, 11 a game, gets 6-7 rebounds for George Mason for the 2 years he's eligible there. But he was not going to contribute at UVA. And so that frees up a scholarship. And that's, you know, basically, you know, maybe the scholarship that went to Nigel Johnson. So in my opinion, yeah, he's not an ACC player. A good player, just not an ACC player.
Not sure. Was it George Mason that Reuter transferred to? Or it may have been, but or Old Dominion.
I think it was Mason. I'll look that up, and you know, if we have to correct it, I think it was. I'm pretty sure it was Mason. He was looking at schools like Mason and UMass, and you know, some schools that the next tier down. And he's a good player.
Yeah, the next tier down, regardless of whether it was A-10 or I think ODU plays in Conference USA or something like that. Maybe.
Yeah.
So I mean, basically the same level of competition, but. And he'll do well. Like, you know, he'll do well. Be a little less competition there, and he'll get more minutes, and it helps the program too. So, yeah, I think that those departures, you hate to see them because you also hate to see the kid leave the university and not get that degree. But at the same time, if they want to go on and play and have meaningful minutes, then it was the best choice for him.
Yeah, I just quick internet search, and it is Mason that he ended up going to. He's got to sit the year out, and he had some solid games for Virginia. I remember the Cal game when he was a freshman. He had double digits in that game, a game that Virginia won in overtime in December. You know, and actually against a couple of guys for Cal in the post who are NBA guys now. So I mean, he had his moments in Charlottesville. And he'll do well at that level. And, you know, like I say, Shayok, too. Shayok at Iowa State. I expect him to have some great stats there. I don't think that Shayok's an NBA player. I think he's probably going to have a career in Europe. And maybe that's part of his thinking, too. I mean, because for him, now see, for Thompson is a graduate transfer. He can play immediately. For Shayok, he's a senior in school this year, but he's got to sit out a year. That's an awkward situation. Reuter's only a sophomore in eligibility, so he'll be a junior eventually. He's kind of in the middle of his career, but all three of those guys will do well at their new stops. But you know, I think that there were people who overreacted outside the program and said, "Wow, all these guys are transferring out. What's going on at Virginia?" What's going on at Virginia is there's more talent underneath those guys that was going to push those guys to to playing 5-10 minutes a game, and none of those guys thought they should play 5 or 10 minutes a game. I don't blame them. They should want to play more than that, but they weren't going to play more than that in Charlottesville. I think that's a sign of how good this team is. And yeah, I'm like you, Scott. You said a few minutes ago, under the radar. I'm glad this team's under the radar. The 2013-2014 team was also under the radar, and that team ended up going to the Sweet 16. I think this team's got even more potential than that team.
I agree. I think this team is a, by the end of the year, they're going to be one of the top teams in the conference. They'll be in the top 15 or so, maybe higher. Who knows? Talking about players transferring out, I mean, they're transferring out because Virginia's recruiting has been so strong that they can see the handwriting on the wall. And as a fan, man, that's what you want. I mean, you want players to be pushed. And if Tony's recruiting as well as he has been, then this is not the end of it. I mean, you'll have more players that might opt to leave in the future. It just depends on, because now players are transferring right and left because they're not getting the playing time. Well, you know, this could be just business as usual for Tony Bennett, Coach Dean, because his recruiting is going to be at a high level. And also, just playing in his system is not the easiest thing in the world. You might be a very talented offensive player, but we learned with Anthony Gill, if you don't display that energy on defense, you're not getting on the floor.
And we saw with Kyle Guy last year as well, Mr. Indiana, McDonald's All-American, who had some games where he barely got off the bench. That's just the way it goes at Virginia. And, boy, I love that we're talking basketball. That's the we're only four, as we're recording this podcast on Monday, 4 days from tip-off. And that's Friday. Then, of course, we got a Monday game next Friday in VCU. I'm going to New York to follow the team Thanksgiving week in that NIT tip-off tournament. So, the way I looked at it, I looked at the schedule all the way through the first two ACC games, I think, are even at home. I will only not see this team in person. There's the game in Morgantown in early December is a 9 o'clock game during the week. That's the only game I will not see this team in person between now and like the third game of the ACC. So a lot of basketball coming up. Scott and I get to enjoy this, and we'll tell you all about it. And of course, football as well. So Scott and I will get back together a little bit later this week, and we'll break down Louisville UVA a little more in depth for you when we get a chance to do the X's and O's there. But we'll sign off for today. Good conversation about UVA football, UVA basketball. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon. Yes.